We're doing this?
Okay. Yeah. How many hours of sleep a night do you get, Jeff?
Okay. So I should get like 7 or more, but last night I probably got like 6.
Okay. So like average 20-year-old American 20-something sleep.
Pretty much. It really is becoming a less and less viable strategy as I get older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My body is just like, no.
Yeah.
No. Jessica wants to know if you have ever watched the video, I believe it's of me on Facebook, sleep talking about PlayStation cereal and airships.
No, I haven't seen that, but okay. I will be sure to check it out.
I do some great sleep talking.
That's amazing.
That's what I'm trying to say here.
You have the kind of you enunciate what I dream about, I think.
It's funny because I'm trying to explain it to Jessica, and like she didn't know that airships were like a thing that were in RPGs.
Right.
So in the video, I like mumble, I'm like airships, and then she's like, "What?" And I'm like, "Airships," like really angrily. Like, how dare you not know what an airship is?
Right. It actually turns out that you were wide awake for this conversation, and this was just a totally average day.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Trying to explain to your loved one what an airship is.
Well, it's relevant again because there is a video game that both of us have played, if I understand this document correctly.
You are reading it accurately.
That features an airship. It is a Square RPG.
You got it, buddy.
I actually have to add that to the list of games I played because I didn't put it on there.
We're here to talk about that Square RPG on this episode of Boss Barrel Radio.
Yeah, let's get into it. So I see you played Brave Fart, as you called it.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say you had a lot of hesitations going in, based on a lot of our conversations in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your impressions. And where first tell me where you are.
Yeah.
Tell me where you
I got the airship and then I stopped playing.
Okay.
So there we go. The end.
No further impressions.
Exactly. Yeah. Like every other Final Fantasy game, you get the airship, and then you stop playing.
Except this game gives you the airship very early on.
Yeah, super early.
After like the first dungeon. So
definitely, yeah.
So you'd had your fill after that. You were done.
Yeah, most definitely. I got the airship. I got a couple classes. I enjoyed the battle system. I kind of liked the art style. But I just, like, the story, the compulsion for continuing on were just completely absent, besides just enjoyment of the systems that the game offered. But from the outset, I know we touched on this last week of just how blazingly difficult that game can be at times. And that is not for me. Like, I like to be rewarded for working hard and like leveling up and or just kind of traveling it or having the opportunity to like travel at the game's pace and not feel like I'm getting by the skin of my teeth and like exhausting all of my items. Like, there's a time and place for that. But I just like right from the outset, I'm like, oh, okay. So this is the tone for everything. Like, there's no tutorial here. We're just ready to go. Balls to the wall. Final Fantasy, yes, Final Fantasy. And it was fine. It's just
you do know that you can change the difficulty on the fly, tweak the random encounter rate, right? Did you know this?
Yeah, I did. I was playing it on normal, and I thought, okay, well, like I can drop it down to easy and. And it'll probably be a lot easier, but I mean, then what am I going to do? It'll just be like a less interesting battle system and a story that I just continue to not give a fuck about.
Yeah, I will say I appreciate the polish that's gone into the localization. Aside from some of the voices, which are kind of shitty, but the localization is well done. But the material, the source material that they're working with,
You can't.
It's ground that has been trod before.
Mm-hmm. You can't bleed that stone. You can't bleed that crystal.
It's got its moments, but yeah, I think the story is. I guess the highest compliment I could pay it is that. it is often pleasant. I'm not going to go any farther than that in terms of like where, you know, like it's not, at no point am I like, you know, riveted or gripped. I'm just like, oh, this is pleasant. Like, this is some cute words. you know, it's not as good as the Final Fantasies of yore. And I think you don't really think the Final Fantasies of yore are that great either, but I think this feels more derivative than FF did back in its heyday.
Oh, I don't know. I like Mystic Quest quite a bit.
yeah, we're not going to talk about Mystic Quest right now. That's a whole other
game. I'm serious.
Can of worms.
Mystic Quest is a really good game.
I disagree.
It's like the best.
I played it. I didn't beat it. I don't remember anything about that game, but I got to like a dungeon and then I stopped. I played like maybe four or five dungeons and then I had my fill. But yeah, I'm talking about, you know, the actual Japanese developed ones, not the Square Enix USA stuff. The Japan ass, as you would say, you know, mainline FFs. I don't think the story really holds a candle to those.
No, absolutely.
You can say those games, you know, they had their flaws, obviously, but they had a lot of heart. I would not say that the storylines in this game have a lot of heart. They feel kind of phoned in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And yeah, that definitely works to the game's detriment. I love job systems, though, so I'm having a good time with it. And it is definitely hard. I'm playing on the hardest difficulty, and it is a very challenging game. Mm-hmm. And that really, I'm finding myself like I'm playing it. It's not like most RPGs that really grab me, where like I have the compulsion to play it for hours at a time. Mm-hmm. I find that I can almost only take like an hour or two of it before I'm like,
really?
This story. Yeah, really.
And it's this, okay, huh, interesting. And you feel like you're able to accomplish things in that hour?
I do, yeah. Well, maybe it's closer to, you know, like 2.5 or something. Okay. But it's not. It's also, I think, beyond the story, I think it also, the dungeon design is pretty bland.
Yeah.
It's very hallway.
Jeff, you've been sleeping this entire time. Bravely Default doesn't exist. This is just one of your airship dreams. Wake up.
It's just
wake
a
up,
PlayStation
wake
cereal.
Wake up.
Yeah, so it's good. I'm having a good time with it. I had kind of always had my expectations in check, so this is not a big surprise to me. But yeah, I think it's good. I think it's a good game. I don't think it necessarily deserves the heaps of praise that some individuals have given it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's good. I'm having a fun time with it. I would happily play another one after I beat this one. You know, in a couple of years. You know, it's provided that it's sufficiently, you know, different. They give me some new jobs to play around with. I'd be cool with another one. But yeah, it is not the pinnacle of the JRPG. It does not tell me that JRPGs are alive and well. I don't play that game and think to myself, like, you know, oh, this is a very it doesn't recapture the thing that made JRPGs so compelling for like a couple of years.
Right. It does not recapture it. It just kind of like tells it to you like an America's home videos of like that quality of image tells you what was happening back in 1993. We're like, oh, man, like everything was really green back then, it seems.
Pretty much, yeah. It's like your metaphor, I don't know how far you meant to take that, but it actually is surprisingly apt, because it's kind of like they've glommed on to like certain elements from that era, mm-hmm. and like those are the ones they chose to take with them.
Right.
And I think some of the elements they took with them are better than like what FF13 took from other Final Fantasies, and we'll touch on Lightning Returns later.
Yes.
But just talking about the first 13 game, the stuff that they take, I think, is better than what 13 took, but they still are not. They still have missed the fundamental piece, that kind mm-hmm. of heart that I think, in fact, you know, comparing it to the other Japanese, I guess you know, RPG that we recently played, even though it's an action RPG, I'm talking about Nier. I think Nier definitely had that heart, even though it was deficient in a couple other areas. I don't see this particular game as having a lot of heart, mm-hmm. for what it's worth. I think the heart is definitely in the job system and, you know,
and the battle system. I mean, it's in the heart is in the mechanics. The heart is not in the narrative or the delivery. Is just kind of, you know, my view on it.
Yeah, and you know, I think for people like us, and or at least for someone like me, I don't want to speak for you, but for me at least, it kind of bums me out a little bit because that's the thing I loved most. Even though I loved the systems very much, and I continue to love them, you know, the narrative was the most important piece. So, kind of bummer, but I'm having a good time with it still. So, I'll keep you posted on how that develops if the story gets any more interesting. It's very Saturday morning cartoon right now.
Yeah. I at the point in which I pulled the cartridge out and stopped playing it for good was when it was like they go to the Clock City and the guy's like, "I am the nefarious leader. Wahaha! Look at my mustache." And the people in the party were like, "He has a mustache and an evil grin. Whoa, my goodness, isn't something wrong with him?" And I was like, "Oh, okay, here we go. I can't do this anymore."
It's funny because in one of the party chats that I just like unlocked, by the way, I do enjoy the party chats, even if they are a little bit shallow.
I would like the party chats if the characters weren't just the shallow, like, shadows of old anime video game stereotypes. And you know, like I said before, it strikes me as that like really good tale system, except you don't have big personalities to fill out those little bits of those little moments.
And you're completely right. But what I was going to say is, it's interesting that you talk about how black and white all the characters are, because literally in one of the party chats, one of the characters criticizes another character for seeing the world in such black and white terms. And I'm like, wow, it's kind of funny that you would talk about like moral ambiguity in a game that just doesn't have any at all.
Yeah. Right.
I'll stick with it. I'll definitely have a good time with it, you know, over the next however long it takes me, let's say a month or two. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not going to be, you know, the game that I marathon. Mm-hmm. But I, like I said, it's definitely giving me my fix of jobs and weirdness. So.
It's no Nier, but it does something for you.
It does. It does a little. It strokes my FF5, you know, job break the system wide open craziness thing. But yeah,
it fuels your fantasy.
Lover.
Would you say?
Yeah. Okay. I would say it finally fuels my fantasy.
Oh, good.
But yeah, I think we pretty much covered Bravely Default pretty well. I think we're pretty much on the same page. I think you just have less tolerance for the shit story.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Japanese RPGs and what their next evolution may be, maybe you want to talk a little more about Danganronpa Happy Trigger Deluxe Bonanza?
Sure, I'll talk about Danganronpa. I wouldn't necessarily call it a JRPG. It is definitely very much like a visual novel type game.
Okay, but I'm saying like it's kind of what Japan's main export is that does really well and finds that like
super
supportive niche audience.
Yes, it is kind of the hot niche right now. Yeah. I think partially because visual novels
got a hot niche right now.
Yeah, you got a hot niche.
You just got to go to the Walgreens, get that taken care of, and they give you a little shot.
I really would like to serve your hot niche market.
Mm. Wow.
Anyway, yeah, I think you're right because visual novels have only really started to come over, I think, in the past, let's say, 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. Starting maybe, you know, with like 999, Ghost Trick, those types of games. I think Phoenix Wright was probably the first kind of big-ish visual novel type game that made it over here. I know you're not huge on it, but anyway.
No, I think you're right. I think that's accurate. Phoenix Wright.
Yeah, I'd say so.
It's the precursor to the visual novel garbage that people like. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think it's a.
It's not a visual novel though. Like, there is still gameplay in it. It's not like you're playing like that PSP game that's about samurai boobs and whatnot.
Yeah. Most of the visual novels that have done well in the U.S. Have fused some manner of gameplay with you know kind of the more typical.
Yeah.
Novel-esque elements. And I would say that Danganronpa is kind of well positioned because it pretty much mashes like 999 and Zero Escape and all the kind of like mystery, intrigue, teens killing each other, you know, kind of dark plot lines and storylines and crazy, you know, Michael Crichton-esque weird shit with the Phoenix Wright mechanic. So it's basically a mashup of the two major types of like visual novels that have worked in the U.S. And I'm having a good time with it. You know, I think that the characters probably aren't as strong as the characters in 999. I never played Virtue's Last Reward, but I think 999, partially because it had a smaller cast, it does a better job of developing its characters. I would say that the 15 characters in Danganronpa feel a bit more formulaic. I would say that it doesn't detract too much because you're more interested in the plot line than you really are in the individual characters. And there's like this dating sim element, which you can either skip entirely or like just focus entirely on the one character that you like. And there's bound to be one of the 15 that you think is kind of cool.
Yeah. That sounds pretty cool.
Some of them are hilarious. I sent you one, Griffin. Did you see the picture I sent you of the fat dude?
I have heard of the fanfic genius a while ago. Yeah.
He just talks about how 2D is better than 3D all the time. It's really funny. And the game is just full of these weird things. It's just typically like bizarre Japanese shit. Like you go to this school and only ultimate people can go there. And you've got like the ultimate swimmer, the ultimate baseball player, the ultimate fashionista.
Right. So as you're saying, they're pretty stereotypical. Like that's kind of what the game is going for to begin with.
Yeah, they're a bit one note. They do have it's not clear to me how much they're going to have under the surface of the characters that have died, which I'll get to in a bit. Most of the ones that have died have been kind of one note, but one of them did have a little bit of depth. But anyway, you go to this school. Turns out, you know, you're like trapped in the school, and the premise is you're all trapped there, but if someone wants to leave, they have to get away with killing someone, which means that they have to kill someone and escape having the murder pinned on them in the subsequent trial. And if they do that, they can graduate and leave the place and everyone else dies. But anyway.
Very VLR or 99 or 0.
Exactly.
Sorry.
It is literally just like, it is so much a mashup of VLR and Phoenix Wright. It's not even funny.
Okay.
And for the most part, it succeeds. The murder mysteries are pretty cool. The first one was fairly basic, but as it went along, they added more complex elements. I don't know. You might like it better than Phoenix Wright because it's not. There's no presumption that you're in like an actual. Law.
Yeah. That sounds good.
Yeah, but the court, the trials are definitely weird. Like when you get to the trials, the game is like, whoa, it is like systems time, and they throw like eight different types of mechanics at you. Like they have one where you're in a debate and you have bullets, you have truth bullets that you have to fire at incorrect statements, and you have to time your shot so you actually hit the statement before it goes away. Although they give you, it's pretty lenient. You have multiple chances, but there's all these bizarre systems in the trial, which I think to some degree kind of like get in the way of just like pure logic. Like there's a part where when you're like accusing the person, sometimes they like just kind of like flip out at you and start yelling at you. Mm-hmm. And then the game switches over to a rhythm game.
Yes. Yes.
Where you have to deflect their nonsense statements in time with the beat. And then you have to clear them with a combo button, and it just gets really weird and really Japanese. But the core game is really interesting, and the plot is cool, and it's got an evil bear that's one half white and one half black, and has an evil face, and it's really fun. I'm having a really good time with it, and also there is a dude. The voice acting is kind of hit or miss, and. Not everything is voice. Sometimes when characters talk, they'll just say like a stock phrase instead of the whole dialogue. They'll just say like one thing, like "of course" or "oh," you know, stuff like that. But there's one character who he is like a biker. He's like the ultimate biker gang dude or something.
Okay.
And he's like really brash.
He's the gankest gankaboncho.
Pretty much. He's like a total hothead. He like punches the main character early on.
Does he say, ore, ore?
Well, I'm playing it in English, so he'll just say like things like, he'll be like, he'll be like, you're full of shit.
Nice.
Or like, you're fucking dead.
That's great.
Yeah, and he'll say it over and over again. Piece of shit.
Ultimate Tourette's.
Pretty much, yeah. And it's really fun. And the game definitely throws some really cool curveballs. Like, it definitely gets you early on, kind of lulls you into a false sense of security, and then kind of, you know, just takes a swipe.
Okay, so I know that, speaking of spoilers, I know that you played 999, and after you finished one of the story threads, you said it dumps you back to the beginning, and it's kind of like, now do it again.
Yeah.
VLR does something similar. Does this game kind of run down that same path, or by saying something about that, do you think that's going to diminish that the first playthrough of it?
I don't think it will, just because I don't think it does that. I think that it is, I think it's just one route, and then, because all the murders are set. So I think it's just the one route. Again, I don't know, because I haven't beaten it. Maybe there's some additional content afterwards that messes around with things. I mean, look, whenever you deal with something as macabre as, like, killing kids, I feel like the undo button is just a few hours away, but again, yeah. I haven't encountered the undo button yet. So I'm not sure. But as far as I can tell so far, people are really dying. Although again, you know, I never know for sure. You know, maybe people aren't really dying. And again, it's one of those games where there's a lot of mystery, and you know, things aren't quite what they seem. But you definitely like watch people die in front of you, like, you know, someone gets like impaled in front of you.
I mean,
it's funny because all the blood is pink because Japan.
Right. It's sexier that way.
Well, they do it because they want to avoid a mature rating. And if they make the blood a color other than pink, they well, whatever it is, adult rating, they get the second highest rating rather than the highest.
Okay. But yeah.
Anyway,
you make the blood the different color than nipples, then you're fine.
Yeah. Exactly. Also, it has a slot game where you can find coins by doing well in trials and searching the environment, and you can put them into a machine, and they give you prizes like designer panties and golden guns.
You got
and
me. Okay, keep going.
Anonymous
Sounds
yearbooks
good.
And self-destructing cassette players and. It's really funny. And then you can give them to people during your free time. And like, if you give them the right item, then, you know, it's your typical dating sim, you know, give them the right gift and they'll like you more. But the dating sim elements are very mild, and you can, in fact, if you don't want to do them, you can just skip them altogether. You can just hit a button and skip free time, which is your dating time. And just do all the mysteries with no penalty to story.
It seems cool, but it also I'm also afraid of it. Like, I want to like it and I want to support it because it's the same team that did the Zero Escape games, right? It's the Chunsoft guys. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, it is them.
So, it sounds awesome, and I've heard that the ending is super crazy, go nuts. So.
Yeah, I can already tell that some weird shit's gonna go down with the ending, and it is so 999, like down to the freaking, you know, metal sheets over the windows, looking exact. They like swapped in the texture from the metal sheets in 999 to the school metal sheets over the window.
Well, see, now that's what really scares me about this game, though, is how much is it gonna be like Zero Escape, and then how much is it gonna just making me think, oh man, I hope that next Zero Escape game comes out. Oh wait, no, it's not.
It feels different. I think partially because you after the murders happen, you have to solve the mystery. Mm-hmm. And I would say the mysteries are definitely easier than Phoenix Wright mysteries, which tend to be have some really unforeseen twists. But it definitely feels distinct enough. Like, you'll be playing it and you'll be like, wow, like, This was definitely made by the same team, but okay. but it does not feel like the same game. And I think that in some ways it is a less focused game, and maybe it suffers a little bit for that, and it has a little bit of kind of like feature bloat in terms of like the dating sim, and some of the mini games during the trials are a little superfluous. But there's a lot of good stuff under some of that bloat, and I think it's definitely worth your time. I'm having a really good time with it, and it definitely scratches the same itch without being too similar.
Okay.
So I don't know what to, I don't know if that makes you feel any better or I don't know.
Not really. Just because I'm afraid to love something like I did VLR again and then be told, okay, it's over now.
Hmm.
Like, well, gung-ho about the sequel for VLR. Yeah, and then this one has been okayed on its sequel, but yeah. I mean, it's not VLR, man.
No, it's not VLR, but it's a good game, and it's you don't have to think of it as a stand-in for VLR. It's just another good visual novel type game that has some similar elements, but feels distinct enough.
Okay.
And I like I said, I'm having a really good time with it, and I can already see the seeds of just like that weird batshit mystery.
Damn your level-headed approach to this.
I definitely came in without strong expectations, and you know, I'm always happy to have a great Vita game because I just love playing that system. So
yeah,
I would highly recommend it.
Okay, well, I will probably get to it. No, wait, I probably won't because we're approaching mid February / end of February, one and the same thing because it's February, and then everything comes out in March.
And you've been busy playing something else. Some and, other great Japanese game.
Yeah, I've been playing some other Japanese great games, and it's called Steel Diver Subwars.
Is that a Japanese game?
I have no clue.
I was talking about the other Japanese game you're playing. But we can talk about Steel Diver.
Steel Diver Subwars. Let's talk Steel Diver. I don't want to talk about that yet, because that'll be a good segue into
the Nintendo Direct.
Yes.
Okay, well, yeah, we'll touch on that later, because I also played that.
Oh, good. Oh, I see that.
Yeah, I played a little bit with Jessica, and I played a little bit online.
Mm.
And we'll touch on that more later. Mm. But what else did you play, Griffin?
I played Final Fantasy... Wait. Lightning Returns Final Fantasy 13.
And how was it?
It's not that bad.
Tell me more about that.
It grows on you. So here's the deal.
Yeah.
Here is the best way to find or to play Lightning Returns Final Fantasy 13.
Mm-hmm.
Get really hungover and then just have that on your console.
Remember, I was the one who was the most excited about it, I think, of the three of us.
Well, okay.
During the lead up, I think we both love the demo.
Yes, yeah. You had more faith in it initially than I did. I thought it would be a hot mess, and then I played that demo, and you know, I saw the light. But so things have changed, and we touched on it briefly last week. But I played more of it, and it still, of course, has its flaws. Like the battle system doesn't seem as open after playing Nier. It is very stiff. And it is just so insanely obscure. Like, I can't even tell you how stupid the systems are in this game. Because, so, all right, not to get too long-winded here, but, so the game starts you off at the point of the demo. So you get to do that part again.
Nice.
Just straight to the end of that demo, and then they pull you out of there, and it starts saying, oh, this is this thing, the arc, which isn't part of the world or whatever, and not to get bogged down by horseshit, but apparently this ties into other games and whatever, but...
Time doesn't flow in the arc, Benevizel, right? I know all about it.
Yeah, like, whatever. God with a capital G, sometimes with a lowercase I, sometimes with a lowercase H, sometimes with an uppercase H. It's just there. It is a bonanza of grammatical delight.
It's funny because in Lightning Returns, I don't know how many times they've killed God, but I know it's more than once.
In Lightning Returns?
Oh, I'm sorry. By the end of the FF13 trilogy, they have killed God on more than one occasion. That's the point I'm trying to make.
There's one God left. Actually, maybe two. I don't know. So anyway, you've completed this tutorial again for the second time, and it seems fine. Like, oh, yay, look at that. I have a lot less costumes than the last time. Then you get launched into the most uninteresting fucking Midgar-ass town you could ever imagine, where it's like, hey, you know what's great? Non-linearity in towns. So they thrust that upon you, and... and then you get this weird like bullshit Sherlock Holmes mystery where you are traversing from one side of Chutes and Ladders Towns to the other side of Chutes and Ladders Town, and so you find this group of people who have been committing murders or whatnot, and then you track them down by trailing them in the shadows, or you just kill them all, and which is a very bizarre thing that I stumbled into that you could do. Like, you can just kill the guards in the town. Like, you can attack them, initiate combat, and start fighting them. And it's kind of weird.
Like normal NPCs that you ordinarily wouldn't be able to fight.
Yeah, like there's never,
that's pretty sweet.
At the start of the game, there's never any indication that you can do anything like that until there's a monster on the field and then you accidentally attack the guard and you're like, wait a second, you really have to rough them up too. But anyway, you trail this group of white supremacists to this magical phone booth that just rings in the middle of the night, and they open a gate, and then you're like, well, shit, they just gave the password. Now the clock engages, and it says, you have until the next day to retrieve the password that you just heard them say over the phone. So, how do you get the password? You have to traverse this town that you've only just dipped your toe into and get all these numbers that are randomly generated on certain walls in this world.
Okay. The story is stupid. The quests are dumb. How beholden are you to, like, running around and, like, doing the shit the game wants you to do versus just, like, goofing off, running around, fighting whatever the hell you want, running into stuff accidentally? Like, does it feel like a game where, in spite of its openness, or despite its openness, like, you are forced to, like, go a certain way and do certain things? Or does it feel like a game where you can just kind of do whatever the hell you want?
Okay, that's why Final Fantasy, you've touched on exactly why Lightning Returns is appealing to me a million times more than Bravely Default is. Because at the very least, it is doing something interesting. Though it is doing it poorly, it is really, really cool.
Go on.
Yeah, so after that bit of bullshit nonsense where you get, your first real taste of how this clock is going to function and how this open world does behave, even in this little, microcosm, mm-hmm. then the game just kind of pulls back and it's like, you don't have to do any of this. Unless you want to beat it. And... but
I want to beat it.
But it never tells you that.
When I play with Lightning, I want to beat it.
Lightning always strikes twice. three times. It's a charm. I don't know. So it pulls back it just kind of is like, okay, now collect those numbers or whatever. It knows you're not going to do it your first time. And then finally, after you've completed like a day cycle in the game, it pulls you back to the arc. And for the next 2 hours of in-game time, it gives you a notice every 15 minutes of Hope being like, hey, just gonna let you know, we're gonna suddenly rip you out of reality and bring you back to the time-space stasis land so you can answer some bullshit questions and learn about some garbage you don't really have any clue about. And he says that to you every 15 minutes. But it's not real time. It's fake in-game time, which I was misled about. Like, I thought it was running on a real clock, but it's not.
Well, it kind of is, right? Like, it runs when you're not in menus and stuff, right? Like, Or do you mean like you thought you had actual like minutes when actually the minutes are seconds or something like that?
I thought it was running on like a non-stop clock that was based on real time. Like, so when you put it your system and it was playing, it was counting down 13 real ass days, and then like you could play your lightning dagger flute and rewind time or whatever. Just very Majora's Mask. But no, it turns out it is at a beat. The beat stops when you go into menus, when you go to the arc, when you go into battle. You can just pause it using some of your bullshit soul points, whatever they call them.
That's right. You can use your EP to stop the clock altogether, right?
You get your EP in there and you feel like a big man. So why this really appealed to me is because after you get pulled back to the arc for the first time, and then they're like, hey, here is more story. Like, there are these five or six locations, I forget, on this whole world map. Like, you've been exploring this one part of it, and now here's the whole world map. You can go to any of them if you want, but you're going to have to do them all if you want to beat the game. And all of them are essentially Final Fantasy 13 characters that you may or may not give a shit about. So go ahead and go there, or don't, or stay here, or whatever you want. It's up to you. We don't really know what we want you to do. So I ended up finishing the first quest and actually found it pretty cool. Like, stumbling upon all the little things, like it is really poorly designed. Like, the maps are terrible. Like, the world is cool, but just it's really trying to be Dark Souls in its kind of like layout, where you stumble from one area that has absolutely nothing to do with the next area, and you're like, "What did I get here? This is crazy magic wizardry."
But without any of the finesse that Dark Souls absolutely brought you in.
Yes. I mean, you're not walking through like a loading zone door, but you know, two things that are supposed to feel really like they're feet away from each other have absolutely no feeling of being feet away from each other. What really appealed to me is you're going through these quests and you stumble upon these side quests where these just completely crazy characters are having these crazier requests for you, where it's just people who are like, "Oh, is this the end of the world? Boy, I wonder what the next life is going to be like." Is just dialogue that's ambient dialogue in the background. Like, they're like, "I've been living for 500 years. Gosh, am I tired." It's just these crazy people in this world. So they have these crazy requests for you. You go and you fulfill them. That's the only way you level up in the game, is by doing side quests. But it's awesome. Like, having those little side quests are super cool. They're mostly fetch quests. But the characters that you're encountering on them, and just like the decay of this. Like, it's very, it reminds me of like the insanity of BioShock or, you know, like a,
but is it entirely unintentional?
Yes. No, I think that the translation has done a lot for making those characters actually seem really depressingly manic in their requests.
Can I say another thing real quick?
Yeah.
Meow Meow Chocolina.
Oh my god, Meow Meow Choco Chow is the best part of that game. Because, oh Jesus Christ. Okay, so that's what makes this game so good is, you know, so I finished that first, I was like, no, I'm going to do this first quest. I do the first quest, I fight this guy who sucks a bunch of balls, and he's completely uninteresting, and then I'm like, okay, I'll go to the next spot, and I go to the next spot, and oh, and by the way, the clothing in that game, not that revealing. So suck it, games blogger, journalist, people who want to make a big deal of that.
I mean, not that it particularly matters, but I think some of it is. I think some of the later stuff, you know how this stuff works. You have to save all the gil or whatever. If you want to buy the bikini,
I want to buy the bikini, but it's taking way too long. 800,000
gil or
something.
It is
taking forever.
You have to make those otakus work real hard for
that. I don't want to work real hard for that. I want to have
Never mind that you could just Google images it. They want to make you work for it.
I want to acquire it and see what its stats are and then think, oh, that's actually kind of cool. So you get okay. I got that first part done, and I'm like, I'm gonna go to the next area, and it's just humongous and sprawling, and there's a neon cactar thing in the middle of a town square, and people have food kiosks, and there's it is a cool world they made. Like, it is a very cool, vivacious land full of absolutely crazy psychopath monsters, like Alice in Wonderland type characters. But you go, so you go there, and what's really cool is just stumbling upon these things where it's like, oh, I found this poster that says the secret code word is Meow Meow Choco Chow, and here's the Choco Chow girl's phone number written on the back of it. And I'm like, what does that even mean?
Okay, so it sounds like if you go into it, like, not giving a shit about how stupid everything is, then you're going to have a good time.
Yeah.
Which is kind of where I was hoping to go into it.
Yeah.
But I was hoping to go into it for like $20, so.
Yeah, and that, I mean, so I view, okay, so I would prefer to buy this game than Bravely Default. So whatever, I mean, like $40, that seems like the right price for this. It is a cool game. Like, it has, like, a system game. It is a good looking game with cool features.
It seems like it's almost got some of the same strengths to Bravely Default, in that it's got some systemy systems.
Yes and no. I mean, like, yes, Bravely Default. Okay, so the game painted a really cool illusion of having a great system to it, like with the different suits and the weapons and just the depth you could dig into to customize your schemata or whatever the hell. But it really doesn't offer enough of it, because you're constantly hamstrung by so many other things happening. Like, money essentially is your biggest hamstring to get anywhere in that game.
You know, interesting.
You need money to complete quests, you need money to buy clothing, you need money to buy weapons, and you know what? You just don't get money in that game, from what I can tell. Maybe it's a near situation for me where I'm like, I'm holding on to everything, because I want to get the jumpsuit of no boobies or whatever.
I know that in Final Fantasy XIII, if you wanted to, like, do all the shit in it, money was, like, really, really hard to come by. I remember it was so hard to come by that people would literally advise that you wait in this incredibly linear, no backtracking allowed game on, like, Chapter 6. You're supposed to just wait there and just grind the same enemy over and over again to get a particular thing, because money is just that hard to come by.
Yeah.
So I'm If it's the same team, that I'm guessing that, you know, that could very well be the case.
It could be. It also could be my fault. Like, you know, you're collecting a bunch of things in the world, like a bunch of garbage from trash from fighting dudes, and I'm not selling it because there's some quests that are like, get 60 poisonous stings. And I'm like, oh, well, Jesus. I have 11. That seems realistic that I'll get 60 in the next. Oh God, so. Then I don't sell them.
Yeah, I mean, it's not your fault per se, because the game should tell you, but I understand what you're saying. So there may be some as yet undiscovered way to make to make quick amounts of money.
And okay, so I'm also playing on easy, because I think that there were some concessions made in the design of that game to say, well, I guess since you can go anywhere, all of the difficulty of everything should be the same. Or absurdly hard. So even on easy, like, the best part about easy is you can run from battles even after you die, taking no, like, with no repercussions. So you just essentially, you can exit a battle if you die with nothing. You just return to full life and there's nothing there, you know, whatever. But if you're playing in regular normal mode, non-gaijin mode, like, you would die or be prompted to use one of your soul points to escape the battle, and these soul points are important because they extend your fate. You can use them to extend your fate game time. So you start out with 6 days, and then the more of this stuff that you preserve after each day, you donate to extend that amount of fate time. But you're also needing it for certain things, like teleporting to certain parts of the map, by using cure spells in battle that are essentially like, you know, a cheat button cure, or your overdrive like refill all your gauges, do crazy damage, super limit break power. And but then anytime you're battling anybody, that gauge also refills. When you complete quests, it refills. So
yeah, the whole EP thing seemed weird.
Mm-hmm. It's not nefarious. It's not poorly designed. Nefarious. It just seems uncomfortable. Like
it seemed convoluted. It seemed like the initial goal was simplicity, but the end result was complexity.
Well, I think it's you're trying to give something to a player base who, where you're saying, here is this opportunity for you to cheat the system and get everything that you can out of it. However, to do that, you have to risk that you're not going to get everything out of it, and things are going to be harder, and not in a way that you can control through strategy. Like I said, the game is very obscure. Like, in order to find those random numbers written on walls, you really have no idea where to go except just hunting in every little nook and cranny of the city and finding them. So when you're wasting time like that, you know, it does elapse, and you could choose to expend your points there or not. But if you expend your points, then you may run the risk of not having enough points at the end of the day to feed the whatever garbage thing monster that is preventing the world from dying or whatever. I don't know.
It seems like it would take.
It just seems like it's a flawed system, giving it to putting it in a JRPG world where collection is important and completeness is important.
It does seem that way, and it's like, I don't know. It seems like they tried to balance it. They tried to make it all work. They tried to make it all depend on this one variable, this EP thing. But it ended up being really complicated and just kind of confusing and a little off-putting to me, at least from the outside. And it sounds like a little bit to you as well.
It's not confusing once you start into it. I think it actually is kind of enjoyable because it adds a little bit of pressure. And it actually it's less pressure than you would think. Like, I think it's been inflated to be this more nefarious system than it actually was, you know.
I got you.
Yeah,
and it is weird, I guess, that it would seem to run counter to the compulsions, but it sounds like maybe there's enough ways to get around that if you're skilled. Like you can extend the clock indefinitely if you just fight enough battles or something.
Yeah. But hypothetically, I think that's a big if. That's a big if, but entirely possible. Yeah.
Okay. So Final Fantasy or Lightning Returns.
Third time's the hottest hot piece of trash.
So bad, but good.
Yeah. Okay. Worse than I thought it would be, but surprisingly more interesting than it had any right to be.
Okay.
I mean, not really saying much there, but okay. I'm liking it a lot.
I'll scoop it out of the bargain bin.
That's the way to do it.
you gameflied it, right?
Yes.
I did not pre-order the Buster Sword version.
Yeah, I told you I can't go down that dark path, or it's gonna be bad things.
But you get the FF7 style text.
I just got my 2 year anniversary chip from pre-order Costume Anonymous. I've been clean for 2 years. I can't do it. If I do it once, if I get one Buster Sword Cloud Strife costume, then, you know, all the demons come flooding back in.
I get you. Who's your sponsor?
My sponsor is Zach.
Zach Fair?
Zach Fair, yeah. Him and his freaking JTT Lion King face just keep me with my eyes on the prize.
In his saucy bathing suit that he wears in that one scene.
Yeah, his Benora apples. He's cutting missiles in half like a champ.
I wouldn't cut his missile in half. I'd let his missile hit me over and over again. I love how in that minigame, if you get hit by the missile, he just is like, "Wah!" and then he readies himself to cut the next missile.
Times are different then, man. Yeah. People were hardier.
Yeah, that's true.
Jeff, we both played a game that's very unlike these other games, and it goes by the name of Jazz Punk.
Yes, Jazz Punk. I just finished Jazz Punk last night. What did you think of Jazz Punk?
I liked it. I wrote a review for it, and I don't know how much there is to say about it, because I think that I think if you've heard the word Jazz Punk before, you should probably just go play that game.
Yeah, I agree. I freaking love that game. Mm-hmm. I will say it bears some similarities to the visual novel genre in that there's not a lot of like actual gameplay. Mm-hmm. I guess what I would describe it most as is sort of like it's almost like those games where it's like find objects in the room kind of game, you know, mm-hmm. like you have a
yes.
picture.
Yep.
Except it is like every object you find is so infinitely rewarding.
Yes. Yeah. I think I described it as 90s in-joke bingo.
That sounds about right. Yeah. It is laden with jokes from the 80s and 90s about video games.
Yes.
You got your Quake reference. It's so many Street Fighter references just left and right.
Mm-hmm.
What else did they throw in there?
There's a lot of stuff, and I think that a lot of the joy of that game comes in not in experiencing that stuff firsthand and playing that game with, like, I remember that by yourself, you know.
When
I was playing it, it reminded me of the Stanley Parable, where I'm like, oh, meta humor, hilarious game design commentary, but actually funny.
Yeah, I would say I enjoy.
Well, I shouldn't say actually funny. I should say maybe less funny, because it hinges 100% on referential humor, but I like that.
Yeah, and not all of it was referential. I mean, you know, I guess if your reference was, you know, like cyberpunk, like a lot of it is very specific,
Jeff,
you know, like
my life's reference is cyberpunk.
I know. But I guess, you know, a lot of it was very specific, like a lot of Street Fighter jokes, a lot of, you know, like Fruit Ninja and other kind of crap, Frog or whatever.
N64 games.
But if you have any appreciation at all for friggin', you know, what's his name, William Gibson or even just like shitty 80s movies about robots and stuff, then you will love this game. It is, I thought it was consistently hilarious. And it is the kind of game where, like, if you get sick of it, you can just finish the level and continue on. I don't know why you would. I think you're doing it wrong if you do get sick of it. But mm-hmm. yeah, it's got like five levels or so. Each one is basically just like a playground. A slightly differently themed playground.
Right. It's an adventure game with an extremely short path to the finish.
Yeah, yeah. If you're critical pathing this game, you probably beat it in, you know, 10 minutes. But if you're playing it right, you'll get probably like maybe a three and a half hour experience out of it. And you will be like, unlike Stanley Parable, which kind of felt like you were just kind of, it felt a little rote after a while. Like mm-hmm. you just were kind of like going through the motions, like, okay, like I need to unlock the next ending now.
Mm-hmm.
This is just like consistently just like hilarious. And you're just like you are compelled to explore further because you know there's going to be a great joke just around the corner.
Yeah. Everything is equally zany. The art style is beautifully shit. I mean, not in the dive kick sense of that, but like in, it is delightfully tacky. Like it is the Hooters of art styles.
it's definitely, you know, low mm-hmm. budget, low whatever, poly, I don't know. But
there's a good payoff to it too.
For sure. Yeah. And they use their art style to set up a couple gags, like mm-hmm. with, like the characters look like cardboard cutouts, and then lo and behold, some of them actually are cardboard cutouts. Stuff like that. What was I going to say about it? Yeah, it's just consistently a funny game and really imaginative. Some of the shit they come up with is actually like just like legitimately cool.
Yes.
Like forget about just being funny. It's like actually interesting and fun to look at and play around with. Just a really great game that everyone should play.
Mm-hmm. I think it is like a required reading for, you know, it is like the Mystery Science Theater of right now.
Yeah.
Like it's the kind of game that a young person who would call them, who would not dislike being called a gamer, they would play that and they would look at this as like a historical reference piece saying, oh, what is this about? What is this gravy race about? What is this thing with the microscopes?
I forgot about gravy race.
Like, what are these the gags invaders, here? Yeah. Like, what are all these little pieces doing in this?
Yeah. And here's something else I will say about it, because it is in the way that a lot of indie games are, it is not purely a game. Like, there's nothing particularly gamey about it, even though there are a lot of direct references to other games. But it is like the most unimpeachable non-gamey game that you can play.
Yeah.
Other game.
Hey, hold on for a second, Jeff. You just turned into a robot, so let me get you if you're still there. Yep, total robot. Okay. I'm going to take a quick pause here. We'll be back in 1 second.
And the finish was... I'm not sure if you have to do the ending that I did, but I'm going to assume... Did your ending... were your end credits in an interesting locale? For lack of...
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. I enjoyed that.
I wondered that, too, if there was a fork of some kind. I think that there is only one direction to go.
Well, if you're playing it right, let's be real here, there's only one direction to go.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you can stop playing it at any time, right?
Oh, now we're getting into... what was that game that we were talking about this with? I guess Last of Us, to some degree.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, though, yes, Jazzpunk is great. Everyone should buy it right now.
Absolutely. That game's so good. Yeah. Speaking of games that you should not stop playing, or whatever.
Steel Diver?
Steel Diver.
Okay.
Tell me how good Steel Diver is, Jeff.
Steel Diver is pretty good.
It's pretty good.
I'm not going to say it's amazing, but it's worth the price of free for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a fun hour or two with it.
Yeah.
Do you have anything? Did it like come alive for you or?
No. I guess it was only surprising in how good it was with just the scenario around it, you know, with the Nintendo Direct that we'll speak to in a moment here. And with it being based on this horse trash launch 3DS game. And, it being free and...
it's true, yeah. I have a couple things that I was going to say about it, actually. First of all the submarine controls on the bottom screen are super awesome, I will say.
Yeah.
I really like that. I don't actually use most of them with the touchscreen. I usually use the buttons when I can, but just having them there and being able to like actually physically manipulate the forward and backward switch is super cool. Mm-hmm. And somehow
turning the steering wheel, it took me a really long time to realize I could do that.
Somehow or another, they really kind of nail the feel of like kind of like the slow kind of deliberate pace of being in a submarine. And that's pretty cool. So yeah, I like that. I also really enjoy how did you go to the bottom and click to read about the premium version?
Mm-mm.
Okay. If you
did
click
you like
on that
Peppy pops up and talks to you, is that what it is?
It's not that Peppy pops up, although I do love that. It's that when you click on it, it's so Nintendo in the way that they try to get you to buy the other version.
Okay.
Rather than just like launching the store page and being like, here it is, Peppy comes up and he's like, hey, let me tell you what the premium version has to offer. And then at any point, you're presented with two options. You can be like, okay, tell me more. Or it'll just be like, no, thanks. Just take me to the shop. And you keep clicking, okay, tell me more. And he's like, in the premium version, you get up to 18 ships. And you're like, that's cool, I guess. And he's like, you probably already want to buy it. And you'd be like, tell me more. And he's like, all right, well, you get 7 missions. And you're like,
I don't know.
Tell
more.
Tell me more. And he's like, well, you can also change your call sign or something. I don't know. And then you reach the end. And it's just so weird. You reach the end and Tell Me More turns into like, okay, I'm in. I'm going to buy this. Or like, maybe later is the other option. And it's just so, it's so Nintendo and how weird it is. And like, you're watching this ad in the game that's like this interactive advertisement mm-hmm. for you to buy the game. It's kind of like with the Street Pass games. Did you ever look at the descriptions of those?
Just going to bring that up. The Street Pass games where it's the rabbit is trying to sell you garbage, and there is a rabbit trying to sell you garbage in this.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. And it's so weird. It's something that no other company does. And it's just so, I don't know how to describe it except just bizarre. Like when that rabbit in Street Pass is telling you all about the games, he's like, do you want to buy it right now? Or I can just talk to you about it for the next 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, why don't you just talk to me about it for the next 5 minutes? And they will. It's something about it. It's just so odd to me.
Right.
And I just find it so entertaining. And I did you have anything else you wanted to say about Steel Diver
before we jump into the direct? I like the SOS, the thing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. The Morse part. Code is super cool.
Yes. I love just writing sandwich names during the pre-game lobby chat and watching everybody just freak out.
I don't think they censor it either.
No,
they typed in some naughty language.
You can okay. And the coolest thing is when you're playing the actual game, if mm-hmm. you type in SOS, mm-hmm. You'll get a supply drop.
Oh, that's awesome!
They'll drop in like a wrench or a homing torpedo or something for you. So, pro tip.
Yeah, it's definitely got that Nintendo magic with all that stuff. So. Yeah, great game. And I wanted to quickly transition over to something else that came up in the Nintendo Direct that happened last week while we're on the subject of kind of free-to-play.
Well, yeah, let's start talking about that whole Nintendo Direct as it was, because I think we're done with crap we've been playing, right?
Yeah, we're all set with that. I was just going to talk about another free-to-play game that Nintendo announced that is equally bizarre in its approach to selling you shit. And this was the thing that just completely like threw me for a loop. I was like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. So the strangest game that I thought they announced during that direct was Rusty's Real Deal for the 3DS.
Rusty's Real Deal Baseball?
Yes. and you watched the whole summary of it, right?
Yep.
So anyway, okay, so it's like a mini game collection. They talk about how it's focusing on like good feelings, like the good feeling of hitting a ball and all this other weird shit.
Good feeling.
It was super Nintendo and super Japanese. But then the strangest thing is the way you buy the games, you don't just download them from the eShop.
Right.
You download the core app, which is free.
So it's essentially like a wrapper, right? Where you just get this shell that lets
pretty
you
much,
interact
yeah.
with Rusty's little sports shop or whatever.
Yes, so in the core app, you get Rusty, who's this like dog, who's
like
down on his
50-year-old comb over dog who has 80 kids, can't afford his mortgage, and it's like
his wife doesn't really like him very much,
and he's nuts for donuts.
Yeah, and he's trying to sell you these games, but you don't have to pay full price for them. You can negotiate with him in the store, in the game, not in the eShop,
mm-hmm.
but in the store, in the game, you can negotiate with him by like listening to his problems or like feeding him donuts and shit. And he'll haggle with you on real world prices for the shit you're going to buy.
Uh-huh.
It's just so weird.
Right. So the super reductive way to look at that is like, okay, so the more you play the game, the more donuts and garbage and presumably new pieces of dialogue you get from Rusty. So the more you play it, the cheaper the game is going to get as time goes on. So kind of an interesting strategy there. But
for sure, yeah.
I'm just hoping for like the initial like, you know, Valve trading card bullshit that happens right at the beginning of the sale when prices are super high. I'm excited for day one when people are like, I got Rusty down to a buck, like right away. Like I get him, you give him 15 donuts and you get him to confess about how he thinks his wife is cheating on him, and then boom, $1.25.
The funniest thing too is that during the direct, Nintendo was like deliberately coy about how low he'll go.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they think the internet doesn't exist,
right?
Like, they think that nobody's going to go on freaking GameFAQs and go to the cheat section and see how low the prices will go.
Right.
It's like, this is a strategy that will work for precisely 1 minute.
Right. Exactly. Or, I mean, again, the thing that I'm more interested in is when somebody just, you know, the next day cracks this wide open and is like, oh, you can just worm right into the eShop here and change any price you want.
Oh my gosh, it's just so funny.
And then you get the Walmart deal of the day, Black Friday situation for the first week.
I just, like, I have no words for how strange of a company they are. And I love them for it. I love the fact that there's just a salaryman with a friggin' pitching machine on his head.
Yes.
It's just, I don't know what they were thinking when they came up with this game.
Good
it's just,
feelings.
It's so out there.
It's all the about the good feelings.
I knew we were in for something wonderful when they started talking about the good feelings.
It reminds me a lot of the Sega Gaga days of Sega. Like, and I'm not trying to, like, say, well, Nintendo's, this is their swan song. No, but it has those marks of, like, we are aware of what we do that's weird, but in all the right ways, accidentally. So that's just, I'm excited about it because that's going to yield some really awesome stuff.
I hope so. I mean, other than that, okay, here's what I'll say about the Direct, and I'm going to give a quick summary, and then maybe you can hash out some of these points with me.
Yeah.
3DS, that's got a lot of great games coming. Kirby looks adorable and fun. Those 8-bit keychains are super cool. Maybe you disagree.
Don't care.
Yoshi's New Island looks okay. That's got a lot of games coming out for it, is the point I'm trying to make.
Mm-hmm.
Wii U, there's like 2 games.
Yeah.
That thing is dead. What the hell is going on?
2 games this year.
Yeah, X. They showed X.
Well, okay, yeah. 1 on the horizon.
X, here's the sad thing about X. So they showed X, and I think they showed some alpha stuff that, like, didn't have all the effects and stuff, because it just looked kind of flat.
Sure
and
did,
boring.
Yeah. Looked like Monster Hunter Tri.
Yeah, except with less energy.
Yeah.
That surprised me, because I didn't really get that vibe from
Burning Edge! Burning Edge! You didn't enjoy that part over and over and over?
I didn't, and I don't know what the general fan response was. Maybe
massive.
Massive. Yeah, I think people were going nuts for it on GAF, but I watched it and I was like, eh. And I don't think that's a function of the game. Like, I don't think the game's going to be bad. I think it was just, you know, missing effects, missing music. But what I did take away was, this is a game that is not, it's not coming out this year.
No way.
And that leaves us with Mario Kart coming in May 30th.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it, I don't know, maybe it's May 31st. It's like the end of spring.
Yeah.
What is coming between Donkey Kong and Mario Kart? NES Remix 2.
Yeah.
Which admittedly looks better than NES Remix 1. I will say that much.
It does. It still does not look like the WarioWare game it should be, but it's getting closer.
I agree. Yeah, they're taking incremental steps, but my God, it is not a good time to be a Wii U owner. No, not at all.
No. I mean, they showed Bayonetta 2 a lot.
They did.
And that game looks...
The trailer didn't really have much energy.
Sure did not.
I don't know what to make of that. You're a fan of Bayonetta, right?
That's
one of your favorite games.
It is one of my favorite games.
How did the fighting look in that trailer?
It looked like Bayonetta. Like, it looked crazy. They Iwata specifically talked about the Witch Time dodge mode, which is 100% the thing that is... It is my barometer for action games now. Like, how buttery smooth that dodge is. Mm-hmm. So the fact that that, you know, is a major point in this game is really nice that they're hammering that home. But honestly, other than that, like, the things that define, I mean, there are still the things that define Bayonetta in there, like, oh, she's riding a weird horse and slapping its ass a bunch, or now there's a giant monster eating another giant monster, or she's riding a tornado, like, oh, all these zany things. But the other thing that made Bayonetta so cool was, like, how just risque and stupid it was. Like,
yeah, and this game or this trailer didn't have that. Other trailers did, though, so I'm not fully worried on that. Like, remember in another trailer she was like, "Do you want to touch me?" or something weird like that.
Yeah,
so
that's just from Bayonetta,
there.
Though. I mean, I don't know what... I don't need it to go further. Like, I don't need, like, a Bayonetta's, you know, pubic hair infiltrating this game or something. But, you know,
you
I would
have to pull back.
Right. I don't want it to be like, oh, well, this is for a home friendly console that we need to. It's just like this whitewashed background of Nintendo Treehouse as these poor localizing zombies are explaining, like, how we needed to localize this game to make sure that it fit in with an American audience that really their sensibilities in mind.
Well, I'm hoping with the year of Luigi extended to March 18th that we'll get a Luigi cameo in Bayonetta 2. Yeah, it seemed to be lacking energy. And something else that I think was troublesome about it was they went really deep into the lore. And I think that game worked because there was that lore, but Bayonetta kind of like acted like she didn't give a shit the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, the lore would happen and then she'd just be like, enough of this pillow talk or something ridiculous, you know? And it didn't seem to have as much of that. Like, Bayonetta was engaging with the shitty lore and I'm like, really? Like,
well,
usually
I think
you act
it's,
like you don't give a shit.
It's once again kind of like the Japanese game folly of let's focus on the wrong thing. Like, what did the people really like about Bayonetta? It's brazen disregard for its own canon. Okay, let's make the canon more a part of that game because people seem to like that. You're like, no, not quite. Not no. I think you're missing the point here. We need more dudes talking about poop that are on giant legs if you go to bed in a cot more. Like, that's what you need.
Well, I think what worries me is that Kamiya's not working on it. Like, he's a producer, but he's not the director, and he's not the one who's kind of shaping. I think maybe without him, I'm a little worried that it'll lose a little bit of what made it special the first time around. And it for it to really, like, do anything for the Wii U at all, it needs to be, like, at the top of its game.
Yeah.
And when they bring in, you know, the black kid who looks like Jaden Smith.
When Jaden Smith comes in there with stupid karate kid garbage.
Then that was a worrying sign.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. Very worrying. But, you know, maybe they'll do something interesting with it like they did last game with the kid, you know?
Yeah, I guess so. I hope so. But yeah, that's on the horizon somewhere. No date for that. But yeah, that friggin' Mario Kart is all they have. And
launch window.
I feel like getting Mario Kart out in May, like, that system, you know, it's not going to be doing anything by then. Like, this is not going to save the Wii U. Let's be real here. So I don't know. I'm troubled, and I got to tell you, like, I'm not picking up Tropical Freeze. In fact, I'm actually playing through the original Donkey Kong Country Returns with Jessica right now.
Yeah.
I don't really like that game that much.
Really?
I like it okay. It lacks the charm of the original Donkey Kong, in my opinion. Well, sorry, not the original Donkey Kong. The original Donkey Country.
I'm
going to
go out on a limb here and say that the Donkey Kong games aren't very good. Any of them.
I loved them, but, you know, you're entitled to your opinion.
The first one was pretty good. Really good. That second one, it was all right. The third one, I don't know. Like, maybe if I was still really into it, there'd be some interesting features. After that, and including that, it's all kind of hot trash.
I don't know. I've always loved the Donkey Kong Country, you know, the core series or whatever, 1, 2, and 3. I do think 3 is the worst of them. Mm-hmm. 2 and 1 are just very different games, even though they are, you know, same team and everything. They're just very different in what their focus is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Returns really I don't think Returns is really a Donkey Kong Country game. It's just a platformer. It's an okay platformer.
So what I'm trying to say is Donkey Kong is the Sonic of Nintendo.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Except, thank you. Yeah.
Except critics don't see it that way. Critics really enjoy Donkey Kong Country Returns.
Yet.
I don't know. They liked, most of them love Tropical Freeze as well, and it looks very more of the same. But anyway, look, I mean, it did well. It sold a fair number of units. I don't think Tropical Freeze is going to move nearly the same number.
Right. It's, no.
So, you know, that's it. I guess that's the end of the Wii U.
Yep.
We'll wait for E3, see if anything else happens. But...
Goodbye forever, Wii U. Yeah, looking forward to whatever fitness thing you're going to crap out next.
Here's the question. Let's do some more Nostradamus shit right here.
Okay. Mark
it down.
Do
they talk about the new console at E3 this year or not?
No. Oh. Ooh. Wait a second. Like, okay, just... Like a sidelong mention of it?
Yeah.
No.
Not even a sidelong mention?
No, that's my prediction is no, because they didn't have a real press conference last year, and they can't get up on stage and say, this is what we're going to do in the future, and kind of undercut their existing products. They at least need to have one more year of supporting their current devices, and then after that, they can freaking shred them.
So when do you think they mention the next console, like, to their investors? When do you think they say, like, we're working on another one? Like, is it September? Is it holiday? Is it winter? I'm going to go with beginning of next year. They put out a statement that says they're working on a new console.
I'm in the same boat as you.
Shown at E3.
Yeah, because you can't do it at TGS because that's the easy answer, and nothing happens at TGS, and Nintendo doesn't go to TGS, and that's too close to the winter time because you're looking to push your units in North America and Europe and all those countries that sell to wide-eyed people. So, I mean, you can't do that stuff then. So you're right. I think, you know, next year in the early part of it, Q1, you have to make that
announcement.
That just like Reggie stepped on the Wii Fit scale and it's red on the screen. The new revolution is here, and you know it's like that kind of, you know, unpacking of garbage that happens on Gaff, like the new Half-Life rumor.
God, I hope it's good. I mean, I don't want to go into the whole. I think we'd be beating a dead horse if we talked about what Nintendo's next console is going to look like, because we kind of touched on that last time. But God, I hope they can do something. I worry for those guys. I think they're, like we said last time, they have a lot of pressure on both sides. So I don't know. I don't know what becomes of them.
I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait.
It'll be interesting.
Because what? There's still some good stuff coming up from Nintendo. I mean, honestly, looking at the rest of their Direct, there are some cool little things that they did announce. Like, obviously, the things we did touch, like Real Deal Baseball, Steel Diver.
Mario Kart looks really fun.
It looks good.
I've always loved Mario Kart. It's a series that, I don't know how you feel about it. I know Jamie's not a big fan, but I've always thought it was great.
I don't really like it. Yeah. Never liked it.
What do you think makes this one look appealing to you, since you haven't ever liked it?
Oh, not appealing. Like, it just looks pretty. Like, this is an attractive looking Wii U. Like, this would be a game where it's like, oh my gosh, this is HD. Like, it looks hot. Like, it reminds me of when the Brawl videos were coming out for the Wii, and it's like, wait a second, what is this definition?
I gotcha. That makes more sense. Yeah, I'm excited for that. I don't think it will do much because it looks strikingly similar to the 3DS game, but I'm still ready to play it.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, and now it has all the Koopalings in it too, so what more could you want?
God. I loved when they were like, they thought people would be really excited about that.
People are.
God damn it.
No, I should say critics are, because critics are just liking to have this opportunity to show off that they know all seven names or whatever.
I guess. I don't know.
I'm so happy that Iggy, Piggy, Oompa Loompa, Banana Joe, Frederick, and Susie are finally going to be featured in another Nintendo game.
None of those characters have any personality.
Exactly.
Their personality is their hairstyle.
Mm-hmm. Their personality is some 20-year-old asshole can say, they were all named after rock band guys from the 80s. Or musicians from the old times.
Yeah, that was embarrassing. That was like the Funky Kong reveal right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, Mario Kart 8, we've got an exciting new addition to show you. This is going to fundamentally change the way you play the game.
Koopalings. I mean, it was cool that they're like seven new characters, right? I mean, that's kind of neat.
I guess. It just kind of speaks to... I think it speaks to how... like desperate or how much Nintendo feels like they're kind of grasping at straws these days.
Yep, yeah.
It's like, what can we do now? I guess we'll put the Goobalings in.
Right.
We have done everything else. This is all that's left.
Right. And now, contrary to that, when they showed off the little Mac trailer for the Smash game, beside it being a really weird trailer, it's really cool to see that character in that game. Not because I have any, like, I like that series of games, like the Punch Out games, but it's cool that they put Balrog into Smash Bros. Is kind of what I'm trying to say, because he looks different.
I'm excited to play with him. I've always loved Smash Bros, so I'm not... I know you hate it, so we won't get into that, but...
I don't hate it. I hate it. It's the worst.
I hope that if you do play as Little Mac, then the coach is just talking to him all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Doc needs to be in there just eating candy bars like, we're driving up to the Lewis, Nintendo 4 Club.
Yeah, that was the best part of that trailer, honestly.
Yeah. But I mean, the thing that I found that about that trailer really strange was it seemed really slapdash, because do you remember the Mega Man trailer that was like gorgeous CG rendered, like super hotness of like the Dr. Wily's castle rendered in the background, and like, you know, they were telling the story of the Mega Man powers and all that stuff, and this was like in this comic booky 2D art style that was like kind of weirdly animated, like a Flash game. And
well, I think the comic book part and the subsequent kind of reveal when he was outlined darkly was supposed to be for the 3DS game.
Yeah,
because you know how they have a dark outline in the 3DS game.
I do, but it still looked like shit.
Yeah, I don't know. I gotta be honest, I'm a big Smash fan, and I'm having a hard time getting excited for the new Smash, which is sad, but that's just the way it is. So I don't want to dwell on that too much, because just the whole thing just makes me kind of depressed.
Well, maybe they'll put in some other garbage Kirby characters that everybody can be pumped about.
Hopefully. It just doesn't really feel like much of a progression for the series this just so far. Like, yeah, there are some new characters, but... you know, Brawl felt new. This doesn't really feel new.
Yeah. No, that's a great way to put it. Yeah. I'm not having that hype like I did for Brawl.
Yeah, and Brawl was ultimately a very flawed product with the tripping and all that shit, but it just doesn't feel like a big leap forward for the franchise at all. It feels very much like they're playing it safe, and I think that they're really trying to get it out in 2014, and I'm guessing that means that they're not going to really do anything that unique with it, so.
Yep.
Whatever. Yep. Holiday 2014.
Yeah.
Please to excite for November 2014 release of Smash.
Bow bow.
Or something. Yeah. So yeah, that was there. What else did you see?
Indie games. There was that weird segment where they pulled out and into the treehouse, and it was like three just or four various staccato interviews with indie developers that are like, wait, what platform?
I like when they interviewed Jules Watson, the guy who runs Renegade Kid, and they literally got him to say one sentence about each of his games, and then they're like, okay, you're done.
Yes, it felt rushed, like a lot of things in this presentation, like very, I don't know, like, not awkward in the usual Nintendo, like, looking at bananas sense, but like in a we don't know what we're going to do with this piece of production sense.
Yep, they don't really get it. I mean, it's great that they have indies, but the management is like, oh, they said they wanted these, so yeah.
Yeah. So we interviewed these guys for 45 minutes. Yeah, and we pulled out this 15-second little blurb about what this game about light and dark is.
Okay, here's what happened. Reggie got really excited because Iwata came to him and was like, okay, you guys have indie games, and we understand that gamers love indie games, so please prepare an indie game segment that we're going to use in the next Nintendo Direct. Mm-hmm. And Reggie was so excited that he sent out the, you know, the Nintendo mystery team of that girl and that guy.
Oh, yeah.
Interviews.
Right.
To go do interviews. And like you said,
Bill Trenning?
I don't know. He's trapped in a room with no doors and no windows. Anyway.
Wait, the Sims is coming?
So they did all those, like you said, the 45-minute reviews. And then Iwata got it and was like, okay, what was I doing? I hate Nintendo of America. Just cut it down to one sentence.
Yeah.
And then Reggie cried.
Right. that encapsulates the feeling of that little montage very accurately.
This is taking away from time we could use to develop Rusty's real deal baseball.
Yeah, exactly. Talk more about the good feelings. Nobody talked about the good feelings in this.
I really want to do a breakdown of how much time was spent on every game, because they just waste time in the weirdest areas. Like, I feel like that Rusty segment went on for like a solid 5 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, it is apparent in Nintendo's game design, as is their marketing and everything, where it's like they focus on the wrong stuff. It's like, what's Mario's new hat going to be this year? Oh, who's the new Koopa boss? Oh my goodness. What's this new level type in the Smash Bros? It's the Fudge Banana Kingdom. Like, it's not yeah. about the new mechanics at large. It's these little arcadey tidbits that sound good as bullet points.
I'm guessing that they just kind of assume that the cool shit, like, they kind of, for them, the cool shit is kind of a given. Uh-huh. And I literally assume that, like, Miyamoto gets really excited about, like, this one element, you know, like the fireworks in Nintendo Land. And then he's like, guys, we need to talk about the fireworks in Nintendo Land. They are so cool. And then they're like, okay, we're putting it in. I think it's just like, it's literally just like Miyamoto is like, oh, that's so awesome. Let's just talk about that. Uh-huh. That one thing in that game.
Rusty is going through a lot of problems lately. Rusty has been listening to Luigi.
Yeah. I really love that official statement from Miyamoto about when the year of Luigi ends.
Thank
Do they
God.
Have something planned? I'm guessing they don't have anything planned at all.
Well,
between now and March 18th. And it was just an arbitrary date.
Sure, why not? I mean, put an end to that shit. It needs to be over.
What will it be next?
Is it just after... Is it literally just a year after the Luigi's...
No.
Mansion released?
No, it's like it's 388 days instead of 365 or something. It's longer than a year.
It's like the Chinese New Year or something, you know?
I don't know.
The year of Luigi?
I don't understand it at all, but I'm hoping that literally nothing new is announced about the year of Luigi between now and the 18th.
Yeah.
Just to make it all that more absurd.
Maybe they will do the Nintendo Retro, what was it? Nintendo Retro Challenge?
NES Remix?
Yeah, NES Remix 2, where they had the Luigi stage, and that will be the final culmination of that.
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah.
But whatever.
Whatever.
There were some other cool little things shown in the Direct, but not really worth getting into. Like, I mean, I thought that Weapon Shop
Yeah.
Yeah, that looks pretty good.
It does look good. That was the last Guild 01 title that people thought would never be localized because it has a lot of, it had a lot of Japanese puns in it, but they did it. And hey, that's cool.
Yay! So, I mean,
Gildo 1 and Gildo 2 are probably the most unique indie games on Nintendo platforms right now. Stuff that you can't find elsewhere. They're distinctly Japanese, and they're pretty cool.
I want to play Sword Cooking Mama.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I was like, what are you talking about? But the forging thing where you have to hit it in time and do different things. Yeah, that looked cool, yeah. So that'll be fun.
It looks unique, which... You know, as a third-party game, that it's you don't see a lot of the stuff on Nintendo anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the most unique indie game that Nintendo has available. Yeah. They don't really have much going in terms of.
They're getting dangerously close to Vita territory with that game.
Yeah, a little bit. I think the Vita's got a bigger indie scene than Nintendo ever will. But yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was cool. Did we touch on anything else?
Oh, you mentioned Kirby briefly.
Yeah, that looked like a fun Kirby game.
If you
want
to talk more about Kirby?
Not really. It just looks like a fun little Kirby game. You can turn into a stag beetle, which is adorable.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a fan of Kirby, then good. If not, whatever. And then there was Yoshi's New Island, which... started out to me looking awful, but in this latest trailer looked a little better. So we'll see. And Mario Golf, which I'm oddly drawn to.
Okay.
I don't know why. I've always liked the Mario sports games, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty much it for the Nintendo Direct. No bizarre jokes this time.
Yeah, very straight-laced. I mean, besides just the existence of Rusty's Real Deal Baseball.
Just the biggest joke of all.
Right. Like, just encapsulating the Nintendo feeling in a game where you're like, I don't know, my fan base left me. I just want to eat donuts, and I'll give you a deal on a game if you hang out for a little longer. You want to take my kids? Yeah? No? Okay, that's cool. Let's play baseball. You got any balls? I got a glove. I don't know. It's in my closet. You're going to have to come inside.
Yeah, so, yeah, it was a typical Nintendo Direct. Lots of hype, little delivery, and something just utterly bizarre and unexpected.
Yeah.
And kind of unfulfilling, but strangely, like, can't look away car accident type thing. And one, like, free thing that has some novelty. Last time it was, like, Animal Crossing Plaza. This time it's Steel Diver.
Steel Diver's good, though. Like, I think...
It is.
Yeah, for everything that they said about that game, where they're like, it's a free-to-play, not freemium, not free-to-play first-person shooter from Nintendo about subs. Like, they were really trying to lose an argument against themselves there, and boy, did that game surprise me.
You're right. It is a fun game, and like all of their kind of... microtransaction-y stuff, it just feels kind of classy. Like, they're like, hey, listen, there are some microtransactions if you want them over here. Also, there are some freemium elements if you want to pay for them. But hey, you know, have a little bite of the game. Mm-hmm. We don't mind.
Yep.
It doesn't feel like, you know, your Dungeon Keeper or, you know, your Candy Crush Saga, which is just designed to separate you from your money. Everything is, like, very upfront.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's cool.
I mean, it feels like you're playing a good chunk of the game. It's not like you're just getting the little nugget. You're playing the full game.
Yeah. So hey, kudos to them for that. I still love that company. I think they're insane. but you know, they got their own way of doing things. Probably not going to work that much longer. But I think we pretty much covered Nintendo pretty well. So
speaking of insane. How much do we want to talk about Twitch Plays Pokemon?
I think, you know, there's not too much else to get into. Well, a couple more big stories. Let's talk about it a little bit and see where it takes us. First of all, how much have you watched? Have you been following it pretty closely or not really?
I am following the cliff notes, essentially. I don't have time to watch the real deal.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm not really. I have it running on mute from time to time, like in the background, but yeah, I don't have too much time for that. But
maybe, can you vamp for like 5 minutes and give the history of this while I step out for a moment? Like,
by
what,
all means,
this game?
I'll go completely into it. You step away. I'll see you soon.
Awesome. Love it.
Okay. So, Twitch Plays Pokemon is a brilliant social experiment and elaborate troll and, like, all the optimism and pessimism about the human condition all rolled into one. Basically, what it is a dude hooked up or got an emulator running Pokemon, I think Red or Blue or something. One of the original Game Boy games, running the ROM, and he hooked up the inputs to the Twitch chat. So people in Twitch chat can control what the character does by typing either A, B, start, up, down, left, right. And they control the entire game. And of course, you know, when it was first getting started, people were kind of able to do stuff pretty easily. You know, there were only a few people there, and they were able to get through the first couple bits of the game relatively simply. But as it gained popularity, it turned into just like utter chaos. And there would be times when there were like, you know, like 10,000 people in the room, then 20,000 people in the room, then 30, 40, 50,000. At peak hours, it gets over 100,000 people all putting in inputs. And you'd think with all these inputs that just absolutely nothing would happen. But in fact, they've managed to earn 4 different badges in the game, and like overcome these like really complex and like weird challenges that like you wouldn't ordinarily think of, like getting through an area with a lot of ledges, because people would troll and just enter the down command to jump over the ledges and lose lots of progress, or like cutting the first cuttable bush, which was like a really complex process, which required learning the HM for cut, and then opening up the menu and choosing cut. And all this stuff they've been able to accomplish with just a bunch of random people, you know, just hitting random inputs. And the big like metaphor, the big thing that everyone is saying, like, oh, you know, like 10,000 monkeys in a room can create the works of Shakespeare, you know, 100,000 viewers on Twitch can play Pokemon. And watching it has just been so interesting and so much like really cool creativity and interesting like user generated content has come from it. Like one person hooked into it, they hooked into the inputs and they set them up to run with the game of Tetris. So like they have Tetris running, and then there's a picture in picture of the Pokemon game running and all the inputs scrolling below it. So they have like the same inputs that are being used to control the character in Pokemon are moving the Tetris pieces around. And like they've managed to clear a few lines in a couple games of Tetris, and it's almost like a form of art. Like all these inputs, and it's just so unique, and it's like it's something that you would just never. Griffin, are you?
I'm back.
Okay, I was talking about how it's like turning into like a form of art. The game. So like one person has taken the inputs that are being used for Pokemon, and is using them for Tetris. Did you know about this?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, like, there's all these really interesting, like, improvisational things going on with this. And, like, it's just, like some people see it as a troll. Some people see it as, like, you know, trying to get to the end and they want to win. And they get really angry when someone screws them over. But then other people, like I said, just kind of use it, like, as this weird form of art, you know, like getting this Tetris game running alongside it. And there's been all these really cool wrinkles that have come in. Like, I don't know how much you've seen of this, Griffin. Do you know about the anarchy and democracy system?
Yes, I'm aware of that. Yeah.
Okay. So they were having trouble because they got stuck in they had to go to like the Team Rocket Tower or whatever, or I think the hideout under the game corner. And they got stuck in the moving tile maze because like it requires a series of like precise inputs, and they were stuck for like, you know, I don't know, 12 hours or something. So the guy who made it came up with this new system where depending on how people can either type anarchy or democracy in the chat now. And if you hit a threshold where 75% of the viewers have asked for either one or the other, like depending on which one you're on, then it will switch over to the other kind. So like once you hit that 75% threshold for like democracy, then you have to hit the 75 for anarchy to go back. Mm-hmm. And when you switch to democracy, rather than polling every single input and like trying to read them as soon as possible, it votes in every like 20 seconds or so, or every 10 seconds. It takes all the votes and then takes the one that has the most votes and does that action. Yeah. And the cool thing about democracy is that you can actually stack inputs in democracy mode. So you can like do up to 9 times. So you can just hit up 9 and it will go up 9 times, or like up 5 or whatever. So each mode kind of has like unique advantages and disadvantages. And like when the democracy mode came out, people were kind of like pissed because they're like, oh, like the whole point of this is, you know, it's supposed to be random. You know, that's the, you know, even if we run into like a stumbling point, it's not about winning the game. It's about the journey, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But then like people managed to like take power back by by when you're in democracy mode. A good way to troll is to type start 9, which just makes you hit the start button over and over again and just open and close the menu repeatedly. So like if people are mad and they don't want to go into democracy mode, they can revolt by just all voting for start 9. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's really cool because the dude who's behind it, who also has like a Twitter account, I guess he was cognizant enough of like the risks to the entertainment value that democracy mode would bring in. So like whether he intended it or not, this start 9 has kind of turned into like a fail safe to kind of ensure that the anarchy will remain in some form.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. I like that piece is still there. And it's just been really entertaining to watch, and it spawned so many great like memes and just fun things.
That has been my most, and that's the thing that I'm enjoying the most of it. It's just like this, it's like this Cambrian explosion of internet memes that right now so much is happening, and so much is just, nothing is happening and so much is happening because of it. Like, it is so awesome to see all this stuff coming out.
Yeah, one of the things that's taken on like an utterly legendary status is the Helix Fossil.
Yes.
Which is like the first key item that Red, the main character, got. And like, because of the randomness of the inputs, a lot of times Red will open the menu and try to use the Helix Fossil, and then Oak will be like, "Red, this isn't the time to use that." And so, like, the joke has become that like when Red is lost, he consults the Helix Fossil, that Helix Fossil for guidance.
Yes, this legend, like this is like some in the thousands of years when everything is data, this is going to be looked at upon as this really weird, like, prophecy that happened in the time, like, there was this moment in history when a lot of internet buzz was happening, or data buzz was happening about this prophecy, and that I'm really hoping that would be like one of the more interesting, like, if a Martian looked down at the Earth and saw you sticking a piece of plastic in your mouth over and over again, what would you be doing? Like, I mean, this is more, less of the toothbrushing analogy, but more of like the, like, as data is looked at, this is a huge mass of stuff, and that's super cool. And
the dude running it is smart enough to like really like play up the stats element of it. Mm-hmm. Like, you can link to all the button presses and stuff, and I think that just encourages the development of all the lore. Like, I think without him tracking how many times people had checked the Helix Fossil and stuff, I don't think it would have taken on this legendary status. And I'm just remembering, like, there's so much great stuff. Like, there was, at one point they got an EV and they wanted to teach it surf, so they wanted to make it a Vaporeon, but they accidentally bought a Firestone and turned it into a Flareon. So then it became the false prophet Flareon, which was going to, like, invariably lead them astray. And then somebody accidentally put the Helix Fossil into the PC for storage. So it was like the false prophet had banished the Helix Fossil. I just hope that one day, like, the e-bards will sing songs of Twitch playing Pokemon. And in so many ways, it just feels like it's like a confluence of all the cool shit that's kind of happening out there right now, like, for gamers, like this kind of meta interactive stuff, and like, you know, internet communities coming together and doing cool things. And it's just like it's really like like I said, it's like the meeting point of all these interesting things in this kind of unassuming place.
Wait. How many of those e-bards are spoon e-bards?
Oh my god.
Good night.
We have to cut it.
No. I'm sorry.
It's over.
Yeah.
Where do you go from there? Nope. There's nowhere to go. So yeah, it's friggin' awesome, and it's now the most popular thing on Twitch. It's surpassed League of Legends.
It surpassed, like, the Super Bowl.
It makes me so happy. And it's so funny because when it first started, there was no picture for Pokemon. You know, like you can choose your game when you're playing mm-hmm. games on Twitch. There was no picture for Pokemon Red. Now there's an awesome picture for it. And it's for anything to unseat League of Legends is just like amazing.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
just, it's such a like an awesome place. Right. I'm so happy that something like that exists on the internet.
Right. I guess maybe, I know I was out for a moment, but maybe you could explain to me. So is every input that is going through the chat being
gathered or pulled or whatever?
Yeah. Is that being executed in the game?
So I'm not sure. I think the inputs come in faster than the frames. Like I think, yeah. you know, the game runs, let's say, at 60 frames per second.
Right.
So it only pulls 60 times a second for input.
Uh-huh.
And the inputs are coming in at a rate of faster than 60 times a second.
Yeah.
So my guess is that almost all of the inputs are red, but any inputs that are coming in faster than the frame counter can keep up with are probably discarded.
Mm-hmm.
But basically all of the inputs are red when you're in anarchy mode and executed in whatever order they come in, you know, and you know, sometimes I think they're skipped over because maybe if you enter, you know, two inputs one frame apart, then it needs to finish the first input, which is, you know, moving down, which maybe costs, let's say, 30 frames.
Right.
Before it'll take the next input. So there is an element of randomness there, like not every single one is red.
Right. But essentially what I'm asking is like, if, okay, so on a very, very, very simple level, like, if you're mm-hmm. saying 10 people are playing the game and the first mm-hmm. person puts an input that says up, the next person says up, and the next person says up, and the next person says right, and the next person says down, and the next person says mm-hmm. down, down, down. And eventually, like, if everybody put in their inputs, could you wind up in the same place you began? Like, so is everybody's input given equal weight and executed in that game? No, right?
I don't think so. I think they're all given equal weight by the system that is like polling for them.
Right.
But I think that the game can only handle so much input
yeah.
at once.
Yeah.
So some of them are necessarily discarded.
Right.
But again, that just kind of adds to the fun and the randomness. And again, also when you're in democracy mode, which will eventually become necessary to pass certain parts of the game, mm-hmm. like the friggin' Safari Zone, where you have 500 steps to go to a certain place in the Safari Zone, mm-hmm. which is going to be a nightmare.
Yeah.
In those modes, you can switch over to democracy mode, where people vote, and then like every 10 seconds, one input is sent to the game, and you can send batch inputs like up 9 times, like I said, or you know down 9 times.
Mm-hmm.
A 9 times or, you know, A 5 yeah. times. So, yeah, so it's just kind of this continually evolving thing, and the lore is developing, and there's a Google Doc that chronicles everything, and it's just, it's so cool.
Yeah.
It's just a really fun diversion, and it's really great to be a part of it. And you can, you know, it's inherently, you can participate. You can go in there, you can start putting in inputs and add to the chaos.
Yep. You just can't do it on your phone. Because the Twitch app does not work.
Yeah. The Twitch app is garbage.
Right.
But yeah, it, whenever they finish, if they finish, it is going to be legendary.
Yep.
It is going to be the moment, you know, that yeah. people will talk about for weeks to come.
Go play that. Go interact with it once so you can be part of the Guinness World Book Record.
Yeah, it is like art unfolding in front of your eyes.
Yeah.
It really is. I genuinely believe that it is a piece of art. So,
yeah. Yep.
Anyway, I think that about covers it.
It sure isn't beautiful.
Yes. Scooby Barts.
Yes. Sorry.
That's okay.
The order. Yeah. Had a thing that came out today. It's been getting hyped for a little bit. I don't know. Did you watch it, Jeff? There was a trailer for The Order. 16,
I did watch
80,
it.
80, 1866 or whatever.
I did watch it. Did you watch it?
Nope.
You should watch it. There's not really much going on in it. It looks like a very pretty first third-person shooter. Really sharp, kind of an interesting aesthetic. They don't have some funky, weird QuickTime events that they're trying to pretend aren't QuickTime events or like an evolution of the QuickTime event, but just look like QuickTime events.
Hmm.
They're kind of like Heavy Rain style in that like you can fail them, but mm-hmm. they keep going and mm-hmm. you have kind of branching QuickTime stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah. I guess this is the PS4's rise or something. I don't know. I mean, it's ready at dawn. You know, it's like, what do they do? They made a decent PSP God of War game.
Yeah. They sure did.
So we'll see. You know, I'm not expecting much. I'm going to be entirely honest.
Right.
But it was not the Borderlands clone I expected it to be.
Right. And speaking,
so there's that.
And speaking of weird marketing decisions, do we want to talk at all about the additional fallout that's coming from the Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes demo?
Sure, we can touch on that.
Because I know we talked, I think we talked about it last week.
Did we talk about it? How it's really short? Is that what we're talking about?
I think so. Just a very brief mentioning of how it's only like 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean, it seems kind of scummy, I will say. Well, to charge $40.
Yeah, that's the weirder thing that I think came out recently now, right? Is the pricing and the resolution, and then Kojima's nonstop tweeting about how it doesn't matter, just essentially get over it.
Yeah, I mean, that's Kojima, you know. He's never been one to shy away from that kind of thing, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's a lot to say except that, you know, it's everyone kind of knew, or at least everyone who wasn't stupid knew that this was not going to be worth the price that they were going to put on it, you know?
Right.
Like, whatever they were charging you is more than you should pay.
But the pricing is so weird.
It is weird.
It's $40 for a physical copy of the game, right?
For physical next gen is $40.
Uh-huh.
I think digital next gen is 30.
Uh-huh.
Physical current gen is 30, 40. I don't know.
I don't know if they were offering physical current gen.
Oh, maybe it's just digital current gen.
I thought that's what it was.
Yeah, 30, I think. Yeah, it's a ripoff. I mean, you know, you should not pay that kind of money for a game that is a mere fraction of the original experience. But people will. You know, it's Kojima.
I will.
People bought Zone of the Enders just for the MGS demo, so
right.
they will do this. I mean, it's scummy, but and I'm sure he's not going to be the first guy or not going to be the last guy to do this kind of thing.
Right. And it's especially scummy too now with just like all the retorts he's having where he's tweeting or doing interviews saying like, well, there's all this side content and it actually goes on for hours and, you know, it it's a totally different game. He's like, I saw so many people playing the game so differently, which means there's multiple kinds of playthroughs because if you're going through one mission, you can choose to tranquilize the guy and carry him, or you can put him in a jeep, or you can call helicopter, or you can fight your way out, or you can just die. Like, there are so many ways to see the end of the story. You're like, oh my god.
It's like, well, here's the thing. I mean,
it's a totally different experience because the body ragdolls each time.
Here's the thing. It's like the tanker. I mean, that's what it sounds like to me. You're going to get the tanker again. Maybe it's a little shorter than the tanker, mm-hmm. but it is. You're getting the tanker. You know, it's one mission. You can infiltrate in a lot of different ways, but it is just one pretty short mission. And, you know, that's always what I was expecting it to be. So
yeah.
It's no big surprise to me.
Sure.
I do think that it kind of speaks to the cost of next gen and how it's kind of an unsustainable model. Possibly, or for at least for some it is. But you know, we'll see what the future holds for this kind of thing. Let's keep an eye out and see if more of these types of glorified demos keep popping up.
Then
we'll get angry then.
Well, if this game gets me as infatuated with knives that shoot bullets, then I'll be willing to pay $40 for it. But
yeah.
As you said, Jeff, it's time to bail out of the next gen for some people.
Oh God!
Breaking news.
Are you talking about the fact that the PS4 outsold the
No,
Xbox
I was
One
talking. It's
January?
Time to bail out of that shit for Ken Levine.
Oh yeah. Is he definitely shying away from next gen, or is he just moving to smaller?
He's shying away from big budget, fat AAA style game design.
That's true. Yeah, he is. Well, this is the thing. This whole thing is kind of shrouded in mystery, and this hit, you know, a couple hours before we went live here. You know, this big press release. Ken Levine is leaving Irrational. And then of their 200 employees, they're laying off all but 15?
Well, no. I think that's – if you – when I read through his goodbye letter, he said that 15 people will be staying with him to work on his next project.
Okay.
He also never said specifically that Irrational Games will be shuttered. He's just saying that he's no longer going to be a part of that team and it's going to be going away. And I'm assuming they'll just be, you know, he did make mention that those people are going to be giving the opportunity to do interviews elsewhere, gather their portfolio information, and presumably go to other parts of 2K.
Yeah, I mean, possibly. But also there was a Google Doc set up for other companies to kind of poach some of these people, or mm-hmm. at least, you know, give them opportunities.
Yeah.
It kind of sounds like Irrational just closed.
Yeah. Or downsized massively.
Yeah, and that's I think we're going to have to kind of wait for the fallout to see what the truth is. And honestly, I could see it going either way, because like we both kind of know, like, you know, however you feel about BioShock Infinite, it was a game that had a really long development time and kind of a troubled development time, and it may have been a bit of a sinkhole, you know, financially. Mm-hmm. And it may have bankrupted the studio. I think it's too early to say.
Right.
And it's interesting that the release that came out focused entirely on Ken Levine, when like it's like, oh, by the way, you know, 185 people have to find new work now.
Yeah.
You know, some of them might find work over at, you know, 2K, but you know, it was a really interesting way to kind of smooth over the fact that a huge studio was essentially closing.
Yeah. It was a very weird.
Yeah.
Press release.
It was very weird. And I wonder what Ken Levine is moving on to, for sure.
He's just really digging into that script for Logan's Run.
I guess so. Well, like I said, you know, now that after making COD for smart people,
he's
going to make DayZ for smart
people. Okay, I got another one. Irrational Games Jewel just turned colors. And now it's time to go to the merry-go-round thing.
You just went over my head.
Irrational Games just found out that there was a robot in the ice cave area that was trying to kill them.
Is this a Logan's Run thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you ever seen it?
Never.
Okay.
No. I wish. But yeah, we'll see what he's doing. Like I said, I think he's going from Thinking Man's COD to Thinking Man's DayZ.
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be hard to see him stepping away from a game that doesn't have such a strong narrative focus, you know? Like, the replayability was, I think, specifically mentioned twice, so that's kind of weird.
It is weird, especially because he's a dude who, like, kind of wanted to do movies, and I feel like he likes the bombast, mm-hmm. you know?
Never really making a game that is strong in the replayability sense, you know?
No, that's not been his thing. So yeah, it's too soon to say. It'll be interesting to kind of see what the industry fallout is, what the inside sources have to say about all this, because right now it's unclear how much of this is just kind of press release and how much of this is like representing how everyone really feels and how things really are.
Yeah.
I mean, so this is, yeah.
The silence of that studio, I think, was telling. I don't want to say, like, I knew this was happening all along, but mm-hmm. I don't think it's that shocking, right? Like, the studio put out their game. It kind of went dark for a while. There are two weird pieces of DLC, or three, or whatever it ended up being, like the garbage one, and then the two for Rapture. You know, were slated, and it was very far between posts on any of those things. And then that whole team just kind of went dark.
Yeah, and people were leaving. Remember, towards the end of development, people were jumping ship then. So, You know, it's if in fact the studio went under because they ran out of money or it just wasn't sustainable anymore, I wouldn't be surprised either. Right.
Well, hey, you know what? I think it's, you know, Grand Theft Auto 5 just did not get enough Game of the Year awards this year to to merit keeping Irrational open. Sorry, Ken.
He's actually working on a Grand Theft Auto 6. That's the small narrative-driven replayable experience.
Oh, good.
That
yeah.
he's going to be making.
Yeah, made by three people.
It's just Sam Hauser and Ken Levine in a room just yelling at each other.
Exactly. Yeah. So I just want podcasts of that.
God. It would be brutal.
They used to have a podcast. It was very good. And then that disappeared.
Huh.
Right around the time Ken got pulled from being both writer and producer.
Mm. Yeah, so I don't know. We'll see what the fallout is for that move for Ken Levine and what it really means. Whether it represents a demotion, whether he really is working on a passion project, what happens to these guys, what their exit interview, so to speak, are, what they say when they leave. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But if they are going down, hey, that's another big studio that is kind of crashing and burning, and that's sad.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know what? He did turn over. In the departure article press release, it did say he turned over the BioShock reins to 2K. So finally, we will see our BioShock Infinite port for the PlayStation Vita. As promised. Hopefully utilizing move controls.
I'm really hoping for BioShock Infinite 2 starring that big derpy hand dude. The handyman.
Yeah. You play as the handyman.
The dude that nobody really thought was that interesting.
Yeah. Wait. What?
I mean, he just didn't have the same... The big daddy?
You play as a songbird, you mean? You're the other songbird. There were two the entire time.
That'd actually be moderately cool.
If you wanted to make it moderately cool, then you just make a story about the dude who was turned into the songbird, right? And have it like Twilight Zone?
Yeah. That'd be cool. I mean, you know. I'm sure they'll put out enough other BioShock games to tarnish the image of the franchise.
If you want it to be cool, then you just turn it into a Telltale-based adventure game with lots of dialogue trees.
Fuck you.
Set in the BioShock universe.
I think that I think that the gaming world is starting to slowly lose patience with Telltale. I think
BioShock Infinite 2 starring Brick
from Brick
Borderlands.
Okay. Yeah. I don't want to get into Telltale and all their issues, but yeah, we'll see what they do with that. But yeah. I think it's definitely one to kind of wait and see what the real story is, because what we're getting right now is definitely not the full story.
Yeah. Well, it's a shame so many people out of a job, and that was brushed away so you know lightly. But at least they did say some interesting things in there, like Ken Levine is making another game, and here are some little parameters around it. See you in the next 10 years.
And you know what? It can't be another System Shock 2 clone.
Right. It cannot.
It's impossible. Given the parameters he's already set, there's no way.
Yeah.
So that'll be cool.
He's going to make a Republic knockoff.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. Do you want to talk quickly about the sales of PlayStation?
Sure, I will. And we could open a whole can of worms here, but just say that the PS4 outsold the Xbox One by roughly 2-1 in January. And that sucks for the Xbox. And lots of rumors floating around about Kinectless SKUs for $400.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what they do, but they're going to do something. They're going to react. They're not going to sit on their hands for this.
Right. I mean, you've got the PlayStation 4 coming out in Japan in the next day or two.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, they've definitely got a commanding early lead. So, you know, if you're into the console wars, then PS4 seems to be in the lead right now, mm-hmm. as everyone kind of expected.
Jump on the bandwagon. Buy one now and play nothing.
Yes, exactly. I booted it up today and went on the PlayStation Store and was like, oh,
well,
all
actually,
of those things I've already seen.
A Thief 4 is coming out shortly.
That is true.
And that should carry you, that should give you enough time to buy, play, and resell that game back to GameStop and then get Infamous Second Son.
Yeah, that's supposed to look good. I didn't watch the media for it, but I heard that it is good. Did you watch the trailer?
Yeah, no, I've okay. not been really following. I've never really followed them in the past, but I've always really enjoyed those games a lot.
I played the first one, and I think I told you I kind of got sick of it after a while. It started to get really repetitive.
Fair enough. Infamous 2, it's a really good game. One of the best evil endings ever created.
Huh. I will probably not buy it, but I might get Second Son if it does well.
Yeah, just watch the ending. Just go okay. and YouTube it or something. But it's profound.
I will right after this podcast, which
is right now.
Yeah, I think we made it to the end here.
Yep, blew it out.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, it's been cool.
It has been cool.
Spoonie Bards.
Release this podcast into the wild.
No, just like Abby.
Goodbye, Jay Leno.
I'm gonna go check on the progress. I think they might have beaten Giovanni while we were talking.
Holy crap. No way.
They're gonna get the Sylph scope.
Impossible.
Impossible.
All right, goodbye everybody. Thank you for listening to Boss Bro Radio. I have been Griff Hoffman, and Jeff has been with me.
I will be Jeffrey Brewer.
Forever and always.
For the next 27 days.
Good night.
Until the end of the year of our Lord Luigi.